Current State on 90.5 WKAR. How often do you think about what you are smelling? Did you just take a whiff because I asked that? What did you smell? Well, Ann Arbor's Michelle Krell Kidd wants you to think more about that. She is a fragrance expert who runs the Smell and Tell series at the Ann Arbor District Library. She's editor of the olfactory-centric blog called Glass Petal Smoke and has given a TED Talk about her mysterious sense of smell. Michelle spoke with Current State's Jamie Paisley about how smell can be undervalued, particularly when we use one sense perhaps a little too much.
I think we live in what academics would call an ocular-centric culture, which is a fancy way of saying a visual culture. We are, you know, if you believe in evolution, when we went from being on all fours to being upright, the sense of sight became more dominant. And what's very interesting about smell is it's designed to protect you and also so that you enjoy things like food and the great smells of spring that we have here in Michigan now. So I think it's undervalued because you can't see it working.
There is also a danger to those that are anosmic, those people that don't have the sense of smell.
That is absolutely true, and it's just been discovered, I'd say, in the last few years in terms of, I shouldn't say so much discovered as being proclaimed by science, because one of the first signs of neurodegenerative disease of the brain is smell loss. And what that means is if you think about food, when we eat, smell plus taste equals flavor. So if you remove smell, it's like having a cold. You get the textures. You will get what's called the tongue tastes, which are sweet, salty, bitter, umami, you know, the umami means savory, and sour, of course. And then you get another sensation, which is distributed by the trigeminal nerve, and that helps you detect the coolness of peppermint, the heat of spicy foods, etc. So if you're just getting that, you can imagine that texture of food would probably be something that would get a little hinky sometimes if you can't get that full three-dimensional taste. And because there is more of this awareness, the word anosmia is understood by more people, probably not as many as should, but it is a very critical sense, actually, because when you smell, right, the way your brain is wired is that you feel and remember smells first, and then the part of the brain that handles language then gives you the words to articulate things. So it's a very emotional sense, and I think if you unpack that, that also illustrates why it's a little bit of a difficult one to work with, you know?
Yeah. Is there a way that one can improve or at least test the nasal capacity, so to speak?
Yeah, sure. What I would say almost may sound a little zen. I think you have to pay attention to the sense to start to develop an understanding of just how valuable it is in your life. So let's start with breathing, right? Because if we don't breathe, we don't live. And if you pay attention to what's around you in your ordinary day, if you walk, if it's the smell of cut grass when you get out of the house or the smell of autumn leaves after they've fallen, you know, if it's the smell of dry earth before rain, something that's called petrichor, that's linked to a molecule called geosmin, which is the jasmine of the earth, all these things are always going on around you. You might walk by a bakery or a coffee shop that has a vent and you're picking that up so that you could almost tell where you were on a street if you were blindfolded. So I'd say pay attention first as you breathe. And then in the ordinary things you do every day, slow down when you're eating and pay attention to what you're tasting in your mouth in combination with smell. Pinch your nose for a moment and see what it's like to eat that way and then let go and pay attention to that. And then you'll start to develop the capacity to appreciate what that sense does for you.
So then it begs the question, for where you are right now, what are you smelling wherever you are?
Okay, so I'm in my home office, and I currently have three things on perfume blotters. One is a true tincture of something called ambergris. The other is an absolute of rose from Turkey, which is a concentrated form of rose. So rather than steam distilled, it's distilled through the use of solvents, usually hexane, sometimes carbon dioxide, in this case hexane. And I have a pine cone I found yesterday that's also on my desk, so I can kind of smell the pine cone.
We're speaking with Michelle Krell Kidd, who is certainly the nose of Ann Arbor. I think that is the nickname you have.
I've been called a lot of things, yes. I think the evangelist of aroma in Ekern was the last moniker I received.
We're speaking with her, and in addition to speaking about the sense of smell, you also edit a blog on fragrances and smelling called Glass Petal Smoke. And I understand how petal, you know, flower petal and smoke are part of mm-hmm. the scent scenery, but where does glass enter into that title?
Well, I have to tell you how I came up with the name, because it's sort of funny. When I decided that this was going to be something I was going to do 9 years ago, I was thinking, what's the direction I want to take? And then my mind flitted to a GPS device. Just that's where my brain went. But when I think about perfumery, right, anything that's housed in a bottle is a perfume, right? And flower petals, right, become perfume. But incense, the smoke part, that's actually the first perfume, because if you separate the words perfumum, means through smoke. And the belief when incense was burned back in early days was that the smoke carried prayers to deities, and then singular deity as we went into monotheism. So I felt that that would be, you know, nice. It was a little artsy. I kind of liked it, and it stuck. People really like it. I get questions and comments about it all the time.
Yeah. You said 9 years ago. So how did you get into nasal concerns in the pre-internet age?
Wow. I should tell you how I got discovered as a nose, because that was interesting. I'm a native New Yorker. I was working for Microsoft when 9/11 happened in an office they had in New York. And I kind of had a turnaround then that day where I thought, my gosh, am I living an authentic life? You know, it was very overwhelming experiencing, you know, the collective emotion, the smells, the sights, and everything of that day. And a little further down in my career, I ended up working for trade publications and found myself in an environment with people who were getting olfactory training to promote a scent by Mont Blanc. I sat in this class, and I was an observer. I was encouraged to be a participant. I identified 20 out of 23 raw materials blind, and the instructor took me out of the room afterwards and told me I needed to go to school. And I said, why? I was like, because at that time I think I was 40. And I said, you know, they're not going to hire me as a perfumer. I'm too old. They typically hire people in their 20s to give them a period of time to train, et cetera. And plus, we lose our sense of smell a little as we age. So I listened to the instructor. He became a very good friend. And I felt that the beauty of what I had learned should be accessible to everyone. And because the internet was just starting to flower with fragrance blogs, I decided that I was going to have an educationally rooted blog. And it's proven to actually be a great choice and a good formula, you know, 9 years later, you know, still kicking it here.
In addition to the blog, you're also given several kind of smell and tell lectures as well, and you're still
yeah.
in the process of that.
See, I moved in here on Halloween in 2011, and in 2012, I really wanted to get involved in community work, because that's a big part of what I enjoy and also what I feel is really necessary as a full human being. And I volunteered at 826 Michigan. I designed Smell and Tell as a way to teach children about writing stories and learning how to talk about things they can't see. That was very successful. And I thought, well, maybe we can do this with adults, too. I thought about, you know, my perfumery training and reflected on how adults sort of interact with smell in that setting. And so I changed, you know, the curriculum a little bit. And in 2012, started the Smell and Tell series at Ann Arbor. And I've done 6 consecutive ones this year. They're typically spaced out, but the demand is getting higher. We get more people in a room than they typically get at a talk at the library. I'm most grateful to Erin Helmrich, who organizes the event and events for teens at the library, because her mind was open when I approached her about a sense that usually doesn't get a lot of attention.
Smell is obviously, if you're going to be instructing in that, that's a multimodal sort of tool that you're using. Does that go beyond age? Does it affect the special needs learner as well?
It does, and this is what's absolutely amazing to me. Children have different ways of learning. Some learn more through the sense of sight. Some learn more through the sense of hearing. Some learn more through the sense of smell. So Maria Montessori, she was really interested in honoring the full holistic student from where they stood. So when you look at the autism spectrum, we know that multisensory learning is very, very helpful. And in children with autism, I found out at an event at AADL that the scientific literature that exists, which defines two experiences for children with autism, which is either they smell too much, they're too sensitive, or they don't smell well, was not true in my experience in working with that population there and at 826 Michigan. My sense was that you had to understand who they were, where their sensitivities were, and then provide them with materials at doses that they could, you know, receive. I think it would be helpful in hospice settings. I think it would be helpful. Smell and tell would be great for people dealing with PTSD. Give them some new memories around some really beautiful materials that they may not have encountered before. I know there's work being done in research in how to take bad memories and transform them so they don't affect people as much. Smell is part of some of that research. There's a lot that can be done.
Yeah. Michelle Carell Kidd, editor of the fragrance blog Glass Petal Smoke, and curator of the Smell and Tell series at the Ann Arbor District Library. Thanks very much for speaking with us.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
For Current State, I'm Jamie Paisley.